There are nearly 20 million college students in the United States. 40% will stop going to church during college. 50% will never return. The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is seeking to meet this challenge through LCMSU. Why? Because 100% of college students matter to God and to His church. College is tough. You need Jesus. We'll help. LCMSU. Check us out at lcms.org/lcmsu.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're going to talk biblical archaeology. We like to do that here on Issues Etc. On this Wednesday afternoon, April the 9th, for about the next 15 minutes, Pastor Kevin Vogts will join us. We're going to talk about some good examples of what's been found in biblical archaeology to corroborate the historical claims, the historical presentation of the Old and New Testament. You can join us with questions or comments, 1-877-623-6943. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, or a tweet at issuesetc. Pastor Kevin Vogts is pastor of Trinity Lutheran Church in Powalla, Kansas, and he's participated in archaeological excavations in Jordan. He's author of an article in the recent Lutheran Witness magazine titled "The Stones Will Cry Out." Kevin, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Hi, Todd. Great to be here.
Before we get into the subject, just tell us a little bit about the archaeology that you've actually been able to participate in Jordan.
At one time, Concordia Seminary St. Louis was a participant with Covenant Seminary and several other institutions in excavation at Abila in Jordan. It's one of the cities of the Decapolis, the 10 cities which are mentioned several times in the Gospels. And so I went with Dr. Horace Hummel, who was one of the individuals, and we excavated Abila. Because I have fair skin and freckles and red hair, they put me in the tombs, which are all underground caves, so I wouldn't get sunburned. And it was really fascinating, really wonderful. So, and that's given me a chance then to travel quite a bit throughout the Middle East also.
What did you see? I mean, what did you actually kind of lay eyes on while in the caves and the tombs?
Well, the fascinating thing about Abila is it wasn't a particularly prominent city, but what is overwhelming is how enormous it was, how elaborate it was. And we discovered, apparently no one for thousands of years had realized, a long series of miles and miles of underground water tunnels, huge underground water tunnels. And it just makes you realize how elaborate those ancient structures were, and how we tend to think back on those people as being sort of simpletons from the olden days, and that wasn't the case at all. There was also a long Christian history at Abila, so we excavated some of the Byzantine churches, and that was really fascinating too. And then in the tombs, there was a lot of jewelry, which obviously is now in a museum in Jordan, but that was always wonderful also. When you're sifting through the dirt and the gold jewelry pops up through the dirt and sparkling just like it was 2,000 years ago. There's really nothing quite like that.
How would you describe, in the heyday of liberal Bible scholarship, we're talking here about the 18th through the 20th century, what was the popular scholarly view of the Bible's historical claims?
Well, I mentioned in the article, sort of start out the article by reminding people that in the 18th, 19th centuries, the Bible was looked upon as almost entirely mythological, a fantasy along the lines of the Greek and Roman mythologies regarding their gods. And I have to say, I didn't really stress this in the article, but that really is a lot of the attitude that people have toward the Bible today in atheistic and liberal Christian circles, that it's more of a fantasy, more of a mythology. And it doesn't take you long on the Internet to find people making those kind of comments about the Bible. And that really is not true. They don't know what they're talking about.
So where would you direct us to kind of talking about best examples, good primary example of how a solid, well-established archaeological discovery has not only vindicated but corroborated the historical claims of the Bible?
Well, one that I start off with in the article that always fascinates me, and you could look it up at the end of 2 Kings, but when the Babylonians conquered Judah, destroyed Jerusalem. They took Jehoiachin off to captivity in Babylon. And it tells us just a little comment at the end of 2 Kings chapter 25 that Jehoiachin was eventually released from prison and was given a ration from the king's table. And in the 1800s, in excavations at Nineveh, in a warehouse that had been destroyed in an earthquake, they found a series of tablets, and on them was one that was a list of those who shall receive a ration from the king's table. And on there is listed, and uses an alternate spelling for Jehoiachin that we know from other sources outside the Bible, Yaukin, king of the land of Judah. And what fascinates me about that is that little clay tablet wasn't a monumental stela. It wasn't anything grand. It was basically a throwaway receipt. And out of all of the thousands and thousands of things in Nineveh, that was preserved, that was saved purely by accident, and confirms part of the Bible. The point is, there's no possible way that the authors of the Bible could have faked that. It's just not possible. They had no way of knowing that there would be this corroboration 500 miles away in Nineveh in the royal archives there, or the royal storehouse, and that that would be preserved. So the people who say that it's just all a fantasy, it has no basis in reality, as I say, really don't know what they're talking about. I say in the Bible, they're the ones living in a fantasy land.
I like the reasoning there, Pastor Votes, because, I mean, what you're essentially saying is we're talking about a very small detail in kind of the grand scope of things in the Old Testament, an inconsequential detail. Whether the Bible had included that or not really makes no difference to the grander narrative of these things, simply a detail that they saw fit to include that is actually corroborated, that if it's that accurate in its inconsequential detail, then does it serve as an argument for its accuracy in its more consequential detail?
I think absolutely. And you have the critics of the Bible have to explain, how did this come about? How did someone, you know, it used to be thought and taught, and I think to this day still many liberal scholars and certainly the harsh critics of the Bible in the atheistic community would say that most of these texts were written hundreds of years, if not thousands of years, after the events they purport to record, and at a great distance away from where they supposedly were said to record. Well, you have to explain, how did they get that kind of detail? I heard a interview once on NPR with a woman who wrote historical romance novels, and she said that for every novel she went to great painstaking detail. She would actually move to the location where she was writing about 200-300 years ago. She'd live there for 6 months while she was writing the book. She'd visit all the locations. She'd search through the archives. She'd look at all old maps. And she said, every time I write a book, I just dread it when it's published, because then the letters start coming in. All of the little historical mistakes I made. Historical fiction is very, very difficult to get right, not only in the big details, but in the little details. And for the Bible to have gotten something like that right, to claim that that's fiction, it doesn't make sense. There's no way to explain that. And the critics don't really explain how this could have come about, that there could be corroboration like that. And that's just one of many, many examples.
We'll have a few more examples on the other side of the break. We're talking biblical archaeology with Pastor Kevin Votes, author of an article in the recent Lutheran Witness magazine titled, "The Stones Will Cry Out."
The dangers inherent in particularly Lutheran Reformation Christians trying to be Baptists in their worship approach.
Craig Parton talking about his presentation at this summer's Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
Just at the moment, a lot of people, Baptists and evangelicals included, are looking for more substance in their worship life. Many of them are looking to helpful liturgies and the hymns of the church to bring content to their services. Lutherans are throwing that stuff off the deck of the boat as fast as they can do it. so there'll be some comments, some discussion about why that's a dangerous avenue for Lutherans to take.
You can meet and hear Craig Parton making the case against Lutherans imitating evangelicals June 13th and 14th at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference in Collinsville, Illinois. For more information, just look for the Making the Case logo at issuesetc.org.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Issues Etc. relies on a small group of faithful supporters called the Issues Etc. Reformation Club. These people have pledged to become monthly or annual contributors to Issues Etc., and this allows us to budget our expenses more efficiently. Now, there are four levels of giving. The Confessor, $25 monthly or an annual gift of $250. The Apologist, $50 monthly or an annual gift of $500. The Reformer, $100 monthly or an annual gift of $1,000. And the Patron, $200 monthly or an annual gift of $2,000. Each Reformation Club member receives premiums like books, transcripts, and the I Have Issues t-shirt. You can join the Issues Etc. Reformation Club by contacting Craig. His email address, craig@issuesetc.org. Or you can call 618-223-8385, 618-223-8385, the Issues Etc. Reformation Club. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Pastor Kevin Vogts is our guest. We're talking biblical archaeology on this Wednesday, April the 9th. Another example that you give in the article, actually, he overlaps into several archaeological examples, is that of King Hezekiah. What's the story there, and where do we find archaeological evidence that corroborates not only his existence, but also his actions?
Yeah, in 2 Kings and Isaiah, we're told the story of how Sennacherib, king of Assyria, attacked Jerusalem, where Hezekiah was king. And Sennacherib's official account was uncovered a series of several cylindrical prisms with cuneiform inscriptions on them that give the official royal history of the battles of Sennacherib, king of Assyria. And they match up very, very well with the biblical text in 2 Kings and Isaiah. And Sennacherib concludes by saying, "Hezekiah himself I shut up in Jerusalem, his capital city, like a bird in a cage." And that's exactly, of course, the Bible tells us that he laid siege to Jerusalem. And then there's a series there of interesting artifacts. There's a tunnel in Jerusalem, which the Bible tells us about in 2 Chronicles and 2 Kings, that Hezekiah wanted to bring water from a spring outside the city into the city of Jerusalem to the Pool of Siloam, which actually figures in the Gospels. And that, again, was said to be totally mythical. It was an impossible feat of engineering for the ancients, it was thought at the time. And they thought the Pool of Siloam was a natural spring. And then one day, 1880 actually, a boy fell into the Pool of Siloam, and under the water he found the entrance to a tunnel and went through the tunnel, and it goes well over 1,000 feet under the city wall to a spring outside the city. And exactly as the Bible describes, that spring was stopped up outside the city, diverted through this tunnel into the Pool of Siloam. Well, the most fascinating thing was, right in the middle of the tunnel, the way they dig these tunnels, and they're fascinating to explore, they would send parties from each end to meet in the middle. And right in the middle of this tunnel was a dedicatory inscription on the wall, which described the moment that the two parties met and that the water began to flow from the spring to the pool, it says. And the most fascinating part is, that inscription doesn't mention Hezekiah, but it's in an old Hebrew script, which is from the time of Hezekiah. And most people agree this is the tunnel that was built by Hezekiah, just exactly as described in 2 Chronicles, 2 Kings.
I mean, you're talking about a 1,700-foot-long tunnel through solid rock. That's a pretty big, that has to be the biggest archaeological artifact, at least in terms of its size, ever discovered.
Well, yeah, it is huge, and it was an amazing feat of engineering, And it is fascinating. I explored quite a bit and worked in some of these similar tunnels at excavation I was on at Abila in Jordan. And there's no way we could do the same kind of thing even with our modern technology. It would be very difficult to do, but certainly with the technology they had. Well, then, finally, regarding Sennacherib, king of Assyria, the Bible tells us that he went back to Nineveh in 2 Kings 19, and then it says that his son slew him in rebellion, and that his son Esarhaddon reigned in his place. And in the royal archives at Nineveh is a cuneiform tablet that has actually what is almost the exact text that's in the Bible. The son of Sennacherib, king of Assyria, slew him in rebellion. Esarhaddon, his son, sat on the throne of Assyria. And again, it's almost impossible without really certainly historical accuracy and even divine inspiration to explain how that text could have gotten into the scriptures, because the events took place 500 miles away at Nineveh, and certainly if the Bible text dated from thousands of years later or even hundreds of years later and was written in some long distant place, the fact that it includes that kind of detailed historical references backed up by the Royal Archives at Nineveh, the critics have to explain that, and they really don't explain that.
Then, with only about 30 seconds here, how would you characterize this for our listeners, the archaeological evidence that continues to mount throughout the last century and a half? How is the Christian claims, the historical Christian claims, how are they faring in light of those discoveries? About 30 seconds here, Pastor Vogts.
Well, Peter says in 2 Peter that we did not follow cleverly devised myths. And the point I always like to make is, if these are fantasies, if they are fabrications, they are extremely cleverly devised, way beyond what is rational to say is possible. There has to be truth behind it. There has to be, really, I believe, divine inspiration behind it. So the facts are there. The facts are piling up. And the other thing you have to remember is we've only excavated the tiniest fraction of the Holy Land so far. So keep on digging, and we're constantly going to come up with more and more and more.
Pastor Kevin Vogts is pastor of Trinity Lutheran Church in Powalla, Kansas. He's participated in archaeological excavations in Jordan, and he's author of an article in the recent Lutheran Witness magazine titled "The Stones Will Cry Out." Kevin, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
When we come back in hour 2 of Issues, Etc. on this Wednesday afternoon, April the 9th, we're going to talk the church and its mission. Does the mission give birth to the church, or the church the mission? What's the answer to that question? What is the mission? Dr. Scott Murray will join us, and then a little bit later, Dr. Angus Manoj will discuss the problem of evil. I'm Todd Wilkin. Hour 2 of Issues, Etc. in 5 minutes.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in Collinsville, Illinois is happy to support the Christ-centered, cross-focused ministry of Issues Etc. Join us for worship, Bible classes, youth ministry, and other opportunities to grow in Christ. We have a Christian day school for children in preschool to 8th grade. We are located at 1300 Beltline Road. Call us at 618-344-3151 or visit www.goodshepherdcollinsville.org.
Have you wondered what classical Lutheran education is all about? Are you a Lutheran homeschooler, pastor, or teacher? Would you like to be equipped to teach more effectively?
Join the Consortium for Classical and Lutheran Education July 15th through the 17th at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. Find the conference schedule recently posted at ccle.org. Discover the education that is our Lutheran heritage, ccle.org.